We'll begin by doing some prayers. The first page in the prayer book, the beige page, we'll read the four immeasurables in English, and then we'll skip down and read refuge and bodhicitta at the bottom of the page three times. Then turning the page, we'll do the seven-limb prayer and the short mandala offering, all in English. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, freedom from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. Reverently, I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imagined. I declare all my negative action accumulated since beginningless time and rejoice in ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of cyclic. I dedicate my own merit and those of all others to the great and this ground anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, four continents, the sun and moon. I imagine this as a Buddha field and offer it. May all loving beings enjoy this pure land. Idam Guru Ratnam Mandala Yakam Niryatayami. Okay. Which ones do you want to do?
Do you start with
Chinray
Dig? You?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
So we'll start with
Chinray. Okay. Mani Padme Hu. Oh, Mani Padme Hum. 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 Okay. So ha om tare tu ta tu re 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 so ha om tare tu tare tu re so ha. Okay. Looks like they're going to have more fun. I wish I could go with them. Let's begin with some meditation this morning. Do we have anyone who's here for the very first time today? Okay, a couple of people. Great. Glad to have you all here. So we'll begin. Just check our posture. Sitting straight on our cushion or in our chair. Our head is straight on our neck. Eyes lightly closed. Lips lightly touching. Shoulders down and back a little bit. Upper arms away from our torso. Right hand on left with thumbs touching. Just slightly below the navel. And our legs in a posture that we find comfortable, stable, and non-distracting. So check and see if you notice any sources of tension or discomfort and go ahead and address them now. The point of the posture is not to be rigid or uncomfortable, but for it to be stable once you establish it so that you don't have to pay attention to it during the meditation. And we'll begin with the 9-round breathing that Geshe-la has been practicing with us. We'll close our left nostril, take 3 breaths in and out through our right nostril. Close the right nostril, take 3 breaths in and out to the left nostril. And then take 3 breaths in and out through both nostrils. And these breaths are a little bit deeper than we normally breathe. And now we allow our breathing to return to its normal pattern. And we'll spend a few minutes just doing a very simple breathing meditation. Our mind, our awareness, is placed directly on the breath, moving in and out through the nostrils. The physical sensation of the moving breath. Mind perceiving breath. Nothing more than that, so that we can say almost mind and breath are of the same nature at that moment. And when we notice that our mind has moved to another object, is no longer perceiving breath, but is remembering something or planning something, we just set that aside and come back to the breath over and over. And that's the process of meditation, bringing the mind back to the chosen object over and over. You can relax your concentration. Okay, good morning, everyone. I'm Robbie Watkins. I'm leading the discussion this morning, and it's definitely going to be a discussion, or we'll be out of here very quickly. Geshe Gelick, our resident teacher, along with the serious meditators from Kadampa Center, are doing a retreat out in the countryside, Alam Rim, retreat. And then this week, Geshe Gelick will be leaving for travels for the next 2 months. He'll be going to Indonesia and places even more exotic than that to do some teachings and other practices. So we have a rotating cast of center members who will be leading the Sunday morning discussions. And Geshe-la, in his absence, has asked us to talk about the 16 guidelines. Who here is familiar with the 16 guidelines? Yeah, mostly people with kids, because this is the basis of our children's and young people's program. So I'm going to do a general introduction and talk about the first couple guidelines today. The 16 guidelines was not a teaching specifically that the historical Buddha gave, but it was based on Buddhist philosophy and the teachings of the Buddha. And apparently, in the 7th century AD, when Buddhism was just getting established in Tibet, through the work of various teachers who came from India, crossed the Himalayas and came into Tibet, apparently, Tibet was like a Wild West town. It was a pretty fierce place. People were very warlike. There was a lot of fighting in between groups. Not the Buddhist Shangri-La that we think of it as having always been. It was pretty rough. So the king at the time, whose name was Songstan Gampo, who had been studying the teachings of the Buddha, decided that this was not what he wanted for his country. And based on his understanding of the teachings, he came up with he took the teachings of the Buddha and synthesized them into a very sort of, almost you could say, non-religious or secular set of principles to live by. And he really made an effort to disperse them throughout the countryside. And this is when Tibet really developed a serious culture of studying Buddhism and became the much more peaceful country that it remained over the centuries. So he came up with 16 guidelines, 16 principles for life. He also referred to them as the 16 human dharmas. Does anybody know what the word dharma means? Anybody want to take a stab at it? Teaching, it's generally used in the sense of teachings. What's the specific meaning of it? Does anybody know that? I think Richard Potter might know it. Anybody else? It's something that separates us from suffering. Okay. Or that's one definition. There are a lot of definitions of dharma. And we use it more generally in the terms of the teachings of the Buddha, but the word itself means that which separates us from suffering. So these are the 16 dharmas, 16 things that separate us from suffering, according to Songstan Gampo. So in 2003, Lama Zopa Rinpoche, and that's his picture to the right up there with His Holiness the Dalai Lama on the left and Lama Zopa on the right, who is the spiritual director of the FPMT, the organization that we're part of. He said that this is something that would be very good for Western Buddhists to study, the 16 guidelines. And I'm going to quote him on this. This is a direct quote from Lama Zopa. You can recognize his style in this if you're familiar with him. Something like this is very practical. The minute you follow the guidelines, your life will change. Very, no ifs, ands, or buts there. They help you to respect other people and stop harming them. They help you to respect other people and stop harming them. So under his guidance, there are a group of members of the FPMT around the world. Alison Murdoch, who lives in England, kind of spearheaded this group. Denise Flora, who's a member and who I'm disappointed is not here today, was very involved in this. But they took the 16 guidelines and made a curriculum out of that, suitable for both adults and young people. It's the basis of our young people's program here, though. And they put out this book called 16 Guidelines for Life, and that's available in the bookstore if you're more interested in studying these in greater depth. But it's a very non-denominational, non-jargony, very simple way of taking a lot of the Buddha's teachings and putting them into 16 points that are easy for us to remember and work with. So I wanted to go through all 16 of those first, just so you're familiar with the structure for what we'll be studying over the next couple weeks. And this is Tibetan Buddhism, so of course it's a list. They love fours of this and fives of this and tens of this and 64s of that. In this one we have 16 divided into four groups of four. Anybody know what the first group is? Anybody? Linda smile.
How we act?
No, that's not close. How we think, okay? First group is how we think. Second group is how we act. Third group is
how we relate to
others. Yes, Linda's very involved in our young people's program. How we relate to others. And the last one is how we, anybody know what comes next? Find meaning. Okay. Four categories. The 16 guidelines. Under how we think, I'll just go through them. Humility. Patience. Contentment. And delight. Under how we act, kindness, honesty, generosity, and right speech. How we relate to others, respect, forgiveness, gratitude, and loyalty. how we find meaning, aspiration, principles, service, and courage. Okay? Nothing very objectionable there, and nothing very jargony. We'll go through a few of those and explain what they mean, and nothing particularly unique to Buddhism there, I don't think, but maybe the structure is and the implications of these. But this is basically the curriculum that our young people's program is. Oh, Aaron, you're here, yeah. You want to tell us a little bit about how y'all are using it in the young people's program? Aaron's the head of our young people's program. Yeah.
Because we basically use the same words.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Chris is chasing you around the room. She's a moving target.
I'll stay back here then. We use the same. We've got a couple of our teachers in here, too. I mean, the words that we use are pretty much the same, and we just try to engage the kids. And it's really nice because a lot of the kids understand the words already, and so they can really relate to them. It works well with the children's program because families who are a little bit Buddhist or not, or half, you know, one parent is Buddhist or anything like that, it's still very familiar. They can apply it to all kinds of parts of their lives. The way we teach it is usually with stories and games and projects and things like that, just trying to get them to connect to how they may be able to think about these things and to kind of improve their own lives and to, you know, help them get rid of anger or, you know, have better friendships and things that make sense to them.
Does okay.
that answer
yeah.
what you were...
Yeah, great. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. So, these are the 16 guidelines. And to start off the discussion, I'd like to contrast or kind of parallel them with another list, of course, in Buddhism. But this list only has 10 items in it. This is referred to as the 10 non-virtuous actions. I'm going to put that up here, non-virtuous actions. NV doesn't stand for non-vintage, stands for non-virtuous. According to the Buddha, everything we say, everything we think, every thought we think, everything we say, everything we do is an action. What's the Sanskrit word for action? How would you translate that?
Karma.
Karma, okay? Very good. The word karma means action. Okay, so we have karmas of thought, speech, and body. Things we say, things we think, say, and do. Everything, every one of those actions is a karma that makes an imprint on our mind stream that we will inevitably experience in the future, either as happiness or suffering. Actions that are done from kindness, generosity, patience, with the thought of benefiting others, make a positive imprint that will result in our happiness in the future. Those done out of anger, jealousy, attachment, greed, make a negative imprint on our mind stream that will inevitably result in our suffering in the future. So every action is a karma, to be a little bit technical about it. So the Buddha said, I'm not telling you this because I'm God. I'm not laying down laws for you. But if you don't want to suffer, there are 10 actions that it would be better for you to avoid. It's your choice. If you want to keep on suffering, go ahead and do these all you want. But I'm just telling you from what I figured out by sitting under the Bodhi tree and looking at my own mind, there are 10 things to avoid if you don't want to suffer. There's actions of body. So here we have 10 actions divided into 3 categories. Over here we have 16 guidelines divided into 4 categories. Body, speech, and mind. Okay, what are the 10 actions of body that the Buddha told us to avoid if we don't want to suffer? killing. Next. Stealing, okay. And the last is?
Lying.
No, lying is speech, okay. Sexual misconduct, which is defined in multiple ways, according to which teacher, but it's generally having sex with someone else's partner or having sex in a way that produces physical or emotional pain. The ones of speech, okay?
Lying.
That's of mind. Okay, that's a thought. Not, yeah. There's one that's close to it. What?
Harsh
speech. Okay, there's one in between there.
Right.
Divisive speech. Idle gossip. Lying, that's pretty clear. Divisive speech, speech that separates people, that keeps people apart. Harsh speech, pretty clear. Idle gossip, just wasting your life in frivolous speech, okay? And the three non-virtuous actions of mind.
Anger.
Anger, mm-hmm. Attachment or craving, clinging, anger or ill will, attachment, craving or clinging, and what's the last one? Wrong view, ignorance, which basically refers to not seeing reality, not seeing things the way they are. Okay? 10 non-virtuous actions, the Buddha said, if you want to stop suffering, physical, emotional, mental suffering, whatever type, a good place to start would be not doing any of these. Okay? The ones of body are the easiest to give up. The ones of speech are a lot harder to give up. And the ones of mind are extremely difficult to give up. But as Venerable Robina characterizes it, start off by zipping your lips and keep your hands to yourself. The basic, I mean, these are things to avoid, things not to do. If we don't do any of these, what's the result in terms of our relations with other people? Yeah, even on a simpler level. Yeah, we're not harming others. Okay, if we can avoid doing any of these, there's a pretty... Not completely, but there's a pretty good chance that we're not going to be harming others. And the Dalai Lama always says, as much as you can, help others. If you can't do that, at least don't hurt them. So the first part of the Buddhist path, the first stage is really about, its result is about not harming others. And the first way to do that is to avoid these actions. So by avoiding these, you avoid suffering for yourself, and you avoid harming others. So these are things not to do. And then on the other side, the 16 guidelines, these are things to do, okay? This is negative. Don't do these if you don't want to suffer, if you don't want to harm others. This is just a guideline. If you want to experience happiness, start doing these. If you want to not harm others and maybe even help others, start doing these things. So they're really almost the flip side. You can look, a lot of them are kind of the opposite. So 16 guidelines aren't organized in terms of body, speech, and mind exactly, but these here are certainly of mind. Those are of body. Those are mind. And those are mind. So most of them are about mind here. Okay? Things to do, things not to do. Okay? That's Buddhist ethics. That's the whole... If somebody asks you, what's the ethical basis of Buddhism? It's not harming others, helping others as much as you can. That just sums it all up. That's what the Dalai Lama says is his philosophy. Not harming others, helping others. Very simple. Any questions or comments? Okay. So, let me get my notes. Just a moment. There's a page in here I need. Did I set a page down somewhere? Where's the one I was? Oh, I put it up here on the desk. Excuse me. Sorry about that. They also talk about if we live by these guidelines, avoid these, not only do we not harm others, but we create a sense of safety for other people. And the Buddha said there are three things we can give to other people. Does anybody remember what they are? We can make material gifts. We can give them safety. We can give them the Dharma. Okay? So giving people a sense that they're safe in your presence, that you're not going to harm them, that you may maybe even help them, is a wonderful gift according to the Buddha. And by following these, that's something that we can achieve. When there's a wonderful reference on the internet by a very distinguished scholar named Alexander Berzin, Berzin. He's really one of the most distinguished Western students of Tibetan Buddhism. And he's been here to Kadampa Center several times in the past, though not recently. So whenever I'm leading one of these sessions and I need some clarification or more information, I go to his website. It's called Alex Berzin Archives. It has a great search function, so you can look up just about anything and find way more information than you wanted. But I wanted to talk briefly about the concept of merit. Have people heard the word merit used in Buddhist? Who's heard the use of the word merit? Yeah. Something that's I've been confused about quite a bit, what it means. We frequently are told that we need to accumulate merit or build up merit, when it kind of implies that if you get enough, you get a merit badge or something to that effect. But it's not exactly that. So I went to Alex Berzin to get some clarification on what merit really is. And as I said in the earlier session, whatever you're looking up, you can start from the point, Alex is going to start from the point of view that it's a terrible translation, and he has a much better translation. So whatever the Tibetan term is, and I'm not sure what it is, he says merit is not a good translation, that it should be translated as a positive potential. So what we want to do is accumulate or build up positive potential. And we do that by good actions, by good karma. Good karma builds up our merit, our positive potential. We perform virtuous actions to create a positive potential. And then he goes on to say that merit is something that arises as a result of acting constructively, which would mean the 16 guidelines. Those are constructive actions. They don't harm. They help. And which then ripens into happiness. Okay, so merit is something that is created by acting constructively or virtuously and then ripens into happiness, inevitably. No ifs, ands, or buts. Virtuous actions will result in happiness, our own happiness. We have no control over whether what I do can make Joanna happy. But if I act according to the 16 guidelines, I will experience happiness as a result of that. Now, certainly we all have the experience of where it seems like we've done something fairly virtuous and it just causes misery for everyone involved, including ourselves. So Alex goes on to say, and this is great because we talk about this a lot in the discussions on karma, that the ripening is nonlinear and chaotic. I mean, he's just so clear on that. If I do a virtuous action, it will result in happiness, but not necessarily today or tomorrow or next year. At some point in the future, though, and it may, you know, so we make a lot of false temporal assumptions that if I do this, the result is this. And just because they're close together, we assume they're cause and effect. And he says, we're just making false assumptions. The result could be far in the future. It could be immediate. But don't assume that's going to happen right away. That if you give something to someone, that they're going to say, oh, thank you, you're so kind. You know, they may throw it back in your face. But it will result in happiness in the future, according to the Buddha. But that ripening process is non-linear and chaotic. So merit is positive potential, something that arises as a result of acting constructively, of creating good karma, of good karmic actions, and which ripens into happiness. Okay. Any questions or comments so far? Yeah, Erin.
I'll just use it because I have it. Do you have any comments on sharing merit or dedicating merit? Not yet.
Yeah, that's a good. I mean, yeah. What do you mean by?
There's always that question, like, how does that work? But maybe if there's a simple explanation or
Can I share or dedicate, give my merit that I've created to someone else?
I mean, typically that's a practice that we have.
Yeah, we do it. Yeah, and whether that is just to make an imprint on our mind that we're willing to share it. Or whether we actually share it, I don't know. Okay, I'm going to take the standard out and say that's a question for a Geshe. I've been thinking about that lately. You know, karma and can we affect someone else's karma? If we have a sense that we are all interdependent, then you can start to see how it may be a possibility. If we think each person is independent, then it would be impossible, I think. But if there is some deep connection between everyone, then there may be some sort of possibilities there. But I really can't answer that question.
Even in the short term, you are strengthening the imprint on your mind. You're making an
intentional. Yeah. Yeah. The thought that I am willing to share it. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's it. Yeah. Okay. And you're making positive imprints on your mind so that other people feel safe around you, okay? That they feel comfortable, yeah. They feel protected, yeah. Any other questions or comments? Okay, so do people get a sense of what merit is? Because it's a word that we use a lot, but it's a positive potential that we create through good karmic actions that can ripen into our happiness. And I think this is an important point to realize. What is a very, for all of us who are here this morning, what's a way that our merit has ripened? What are we experiencing as a result of our merit right now?
We have a Buddhist center here with two qualified teachers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's saying, Alex goes on to say, we want to build up our positive potential, our merit, so that we will get circumstances conducive for gaining insight into the Dharma. Okay? The fact that we live in Raleigh, North Carolina, and we have a fully qualified Tibetan teacher and a place to come meditate isn't just because we're lucky, isn't just happened, and just because our number came up. That is the result of merit. The merit that each of us has created, that we have this opportunity to study the Dharma, that which doesn't necessarily mean just the teachings of the Buddha, but in the broader sense, that which separates us from suffering. That is a result of past positive actions. So I think it's very important to realize that we're experiencing that positive potential right now. The fact that we have a mind that can understand the teachings, that the teachings are accessible to us, that we can come and meditate. It's very important to realize and something to give yourself a little pat on the back, not in an egotistical way, but say, yeah, this is the way merit works. Okay? So, that's all. But this is Buddhist Ethics 101. Don't hurt others. Help them as much as you can. That's what it's all about, according to the Buddha. Let's see. Okay, I wanted to say a little bit briefly about each of the first four ways to think, ways of thinking that we should cultivate, that we should start to practice, even if it seems forced or unnatural. Start to develop the habit of thinking this way. This is another quote from Venerable Urbina. She says, you know, becoming enlightened, it's just about developing new habits. That's all it is. It's nothing woo-woo or amazing. It's just developing new habits. We have habits of thinking in certain ways. We need to develop habits of thinking in other ways. And according to the Buddhist point of view, our mind is extremely flexible, changeable. We think we have certain patterns or ways of thinking and acting that can't be changed. And the Buddha says that's really a wrong view. You can change your mind into anything you want to change it into, but it takes some work. It's not just going to happen. So the first quality we should cultivate in the way we think is humility. Who wants to take a stab at defining humility for me? Okay, thank you. It's going to be recorded for all eternity. Yeah.
Better? Can you guys hear?
Yeah.
Humility at this point is the action of putting somebody before myself in whatever I'm thinking or doing. And I certainly don't always do it.
Okay.
But that's what I'm thinking humility is.
Okay, good. Anyone else want to add to that? Back here. This class is all about Chris getting his daily exercise, okay? So, like I said in the earlier one, we're going to go back and forth, front to back, you know.
Back to the children's program. In the children's program, we use it, and I teach the second to fourth graders, so keep that age in mind. We talk about not being boastful or bragging or thinking of yourself as better than others.
Okay.
Anyone else?
This has to do with humbleness.
Mm-hmm.
It's just being humble and not prideful.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think those all are getting at it. I'm going to read what they put in the book on the 16 guidelines. Humility is the attitude of experiencing the world and what it contains with wonder and awe. It is about seeing ourselves as a small part of a vast cosmos inhabited by people and creatures from whom we can learn. Humility is quiet strength. A person with humility can see beyond their viewpoint and interests. Humility shifts our perspective from me to others and is delighted to do so. But they emphasize the idea, it means we can learn from, we accept that we can learn from others. We're very aware from that. And with each guideline, they give a couple quotes and they just, people all over the map that they quote. This one from a Greek philosopher. It is impossible for a man to learn what he thinks he already knows. And then another one, while you think you're green, you'll grow. When you think you're ripe, you begin to get rotten. And then from Galileo, I never met a man so ignorant that I couldn't learn something from him. Yeah, so it's a sense of you can learn something from everyone. Okay? Any other comments about humility? There's a good one. Let's see. No, that's on another one. Okay. Patience. Patience is a word that comes up a lot in more officially Buddhist teachings. What is patience? Anybody want to take a stab at that?
Cure for anger?
Cure, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, in the traditional teachings, patience is seen as the antidote or the cure for anger. Anyone else? Yeah. Wait, up here, Chris.
I would express patience as a lack of anticipation,
mm-hmm.
allowing what will be to come
uh-huh.
into being.
Okay, that's good, yeah. Dorothy.
To me, what I've learned patience to be is a form of self-restraint,
mm-hmm.
not to act immediately, mm-hmm. but to sit with it and just wait.
Okay.
To me, that is patience.
Yeah.
And that can be difficult.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, here's what they say. Patience gives us the flexibility. Yeah, this is what you're saying, Dorothy, I think. Patience gives us the flexibility and strength not to be a victim of circumstance. It's like having a protective suit of armor. It doesn't make us passive or resigned or take away the ability to respond appropriately. On the contrary, patience makes it far more likely we can respond in an appropriate way because we retain the ability to think clearly. And anger, and particularly, say, in Buddhism, if your mind is angry, you lose all ability to see a situation accurately. It just, your mind is just on fire. So patience is the antidote to that, what allows us to see a difficult situation clearly. And they give a quote from His Holiness the Dalai Lama. Many people think that to be patient is a sign of weakness. I think that is a mistake. It is anger that is a sign of weakness. I think that's very good. Yeah, I'd give him thumbs up on that one. I'm sure that'll make him feel good. Oh, gosh. Okay, next mental quality, next way to think that we should cultivate, contentment. What's contentment? What do you say?
To not want.
To not want, okay. David, over here. And then up here.
Well, we live in a world where there's so many things we're told we might want or should want. There's so many qualities or things that somebody might say we should have or do, but being content would be an attitude where you're happy without most of that.
Mm-hmm.
And with the place where you happen to be born in life or where you've gotten to, and not insisting that somehow happiness requires things completely different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Yeah, contentment and happiness are, in the according to Buddha, the Buddha are very closely related. They're not quite exactly the same thing, but contentment is a prerequisite for happiness. Really need it. Okay, up here. Yeah, a few rows up in front.
Yeah, I think... He says exactly what I try to say. The contentment is to be accepting what it is in any situation,
mm-hmm.
to be happy. It doesn't matter where you are, where you live, what you have or not. Be happy when they say the heaven and hell is within us.
Mm-hmm.
So we can be happy with not to have so much stuff, or we can be miserable and we have all the money of the world.
Okay, thank you. I'll read what they say in the book on the 16 guidelines. Contentment is a state of mind that has nothing to do with money, objects, or other people. Instead, it's about finding a point of stillness within ourselves, which allows us to be quietly happy, whatever our situation may be, and to be at peace with who we are. And this came up in the earlier class, but that doesn't rule out aspiring, okay? We're not going to talk about aspiration today, but that's another positive quality. But to be at peace with who we are, that's contentment. Is that how? What do you all talk about in the children's program? How do you? That seems like that'd be a hard one. Uh huh. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do the kids get that? Because our adults don't, I don't think. Okay. And then the last, and I think Venerable Lama in a couple of weeks is going to talk more about contentment specifically. And the last one is delight. Anybody want to take a stab at delight? Okay.
I think delight's really interesting. So there's, you know, you're talking, because it relates kind of to the whole, the positive, the why we have things that we have now. Like
mm-hmm.
if we see a beautiful rainbow,
mm-hmm.
being able to delight in that and not, and also kind of understanding that it comes from past positive actions and letting that kind of be a motivation for the things that we can enjoy in now.
Mm-hmm.
And also the other part of it being the little, we have a little saying for each guideline with the kids, and this one's my joy times two when I'm happy for you, I think is it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really delighting that practice of being happy for others and kind of everything that went into their successes and their happiness and the things that they're enjoying.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, especially for adults, there's delighting in anyone's virtuous actions is especially important.
Yeah. Sometimes we use the word rejoice. We can rejoice when we do something virtuous. We can rejoice when somebody else does something virtuous. Delight is the delicious taste we get when something good happens. Rejoicing, yeah, let's see. Yeah. Yeah, it's a delicious taste when something good happens. And whether something good that happens to us, something good that happens to someone else, something good we do, something good someone else does, we can rejoice, we can take delight in that. So another positive mental quality to cultivate. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Others, yourself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Linda in the back, and then Dorothy.
And oftentimes what comes up in the children's program is a lot of the 16 guidelines overlap. So I was just sitting here thinking of contentment and how we deal with that in the children's program, and part of that is trying not to be jealous of others. And so that ties to this delight in, you know, having delight when something good happens to others, or, you know, our friends get that Lego set that we want, or, you know, that sort of thing, rather than, being jealous. Take delight in that and be content with what you have.
Okay. And then Dorothy over here. I think we've worn Chris out.
To me, delight is like, I've seen people or heard people say, well, that's a delightful person. And to me, delightful is kind of a person who's got positive attitude,
mm-hmm.
who looks at things in a happy or just, instead of looking at it at the negative way that you could look at it, they always see the positive and
mm-hmm.
bright side of things. And
yeah.
to me, that's what delight is.
Okay, great. Okay. Any more comments before we do our closing meditation? Okay. We'll do a brief meditation and then we'll do our prayers and finish on time. Okay, so we're going to do just a brief, what we call a review meditation, where we'll be thinking about what we've talked about today and just cementing that in our mind. So check your posture. Take a couple deep breaths from the abdomen to settle your mind. Now allow your breathing to return to normal and just take a little time to pay attention to your breath. And now we'll take a minute to review each of the four positive ways to think. Four ways of thinking that create merit, i.e. the potential for happiness. The first is humility. So just reflect on your understanding of what humility is and fix that in your mind. Now reflect on patience. What does that mean? What does that feel like? And now, contentment. What is that? What does that feel like? What is that thought like? And finally, delight. What is the mental experience of delight. Humility, patience, contentment, delight. Four positive ways of thinking that will ripen into happiness. According to the Buddha, no ifs, ands, or buts. It's guaranteed. Okay, and you can open the prayer books, and we're running out of time. So on the pink page, we'll do the dedication verses from Shantideva, and then we'll do seven green Tara mantras. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creatures suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvest. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid, those bound be freed. May the powerless find power, and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, and as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. Om tare tu tare tu re so ha. 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 Om tare tu tare tu re so ha.